So basically, part of the gift bag that Netanyahu gave to his extremist minister Bezalel Smotrich to agree to the ceasefire in Gaza was to extend the war goals under the radar quietly to include the West Bank. So now the West Bank, from Israel's perspective, is a war zone. So that's why you have, for example, Israeli checkpoints booming and skyrocketing all across the West Bank, despite the IDF chief of staff, who is a settler himself, Herzi Halevi. He is not a pro-Palestinian left wing, but that IDF chief of staff, he warned Netanyahu and Smotrich. He said, don't put these checkpoints. It will lead and push Palestinians to take to arms, to armed resistance, to resist Israel's occupation. But Netanyahu overruled him. In Jenin, you have a way worse dynamic than the rest of the West Bank, where Israel is trying to turn it into a clone of Gaza, ethnic cleansing, pushing people out and destroying homes systematically one after the other. All of it is to explode the West Bank, to use it as a pretext for a major war to push Palestinians out. That's the agenda of Israel's extremist ministers at the moment.
Mohammed Shahada, we thank you so much for being with us. Writer and analyst from Gaza, chief of communications at Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor. And that does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is Jeremy Scahill, author of Dirty Wars, and you're listening to KBOO, Portland, 90.7.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
This is Keeping It Real, and I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest is poet, filmmaker, educator, retired therapist, and thought leader, Latoya Hampton, also known as the Poet's Lady Rose. She's holding Rhymes and Roots, celebrating North Portland through poetry workshops through Sunday, February 9. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Lisa.
Normally at this point, I ask guests, what do you do and why? But you do a lot of stuff, and it's mingled together in ways that are was beautiful and amazing. You teach CPR and first aid and how to be a babysitter. You teach people poetry, and you attended a storytelling event, which is its own thing, in November, all of these things. So I'm going to come back to it and say, what do you do and why?
You're right. Sometimes I have a hard time explaining it myself. You know, as you mentioned, I do a lot of things. First and foremost, I'm an educator. I love to learn myself, but also help other people learn, especially things that will help empower them. And so in many ways, so the first aid, CPR, babysitter training, as well as Home Alone, I actually just came from teaching a class at Lowerhurst for the, what we call the Safe at Home class. You know, that empowers people to take care of themselves and other people, hopefully prevent emergencies, and if an emergency happens to happen, then empower them to act, right, and be of assistance. The poetry, the performance aspect of the poetry came later, and I have always been a writer. Performance came later. I was a reluctant performer. Black Butterfly, I believe you've interviewed her before. She kind of, not physically forced, but just kind of pushed me. Like, no, you have something to share. You know, it would be a shame to waste this gift. You have a responsibility to share these things that you're writing about and what's going on in your head and your heart. And so I started performing in 2008. And since then, yes, I've started workshops. I have partnered with the library here, Multnomah County Library, to do workshops. I've gone to Corvallis. I've started teaching at conferences in the last year. So I've done the Genius Conference up in Seattle, as well as last fall I did, I'm going to get the acronym wrong, I know I am, but Oregon Arts Educators of Oregon or something like that. So the K-12 educators here in Oregon had their conference last fall, and I presented a workshop there using poetry. And so really, like, the common theme with that is just empowering people to find their voice and act, depending on what it is, you know, just empowerment really across the board. So
then there's just so many things. To have a better sense of your personal safety, like how to take care of yourself physically, it's something that we have to do more and more, because it's not that easy to just go to a doctor or even go to an urgent care or something if we think something's wrong. Even though with what you're doing, there's times when, of course, you're going to stabilize someone and get them to the emergency room or something like that. But can I ask you questions about that? And then we can talk about poetry too.
Sure. To the best of my ability, I will.
All right. Actually, I feel like in a message, you said something about you decided to teach CPR because of a poem, or you decided to write poetry because of CPR. Set me straight and tell the story. I just want to hear it.
Well, actually, no, I think that's where one of the difficult things about with the many things I do coming together gets a little confusing. So we did the storytelling event back in October. That was actually put on through Make-With. Make-With is about a year old now. It is kind of an education center, and eventually it'll be a hardware center. Target population being women, or women identifying queer community, although everybody's welcome. And so Aria, who created Make With, and they're out on like 72nd-ish and Foster, I want to say. And so Aria and I had met previously as she was opening Make With for me to possibly do a CPR first aid class there for their DIYers. So really, that's also the, like, you know, support and education for DIY project people. And so I'm like, hey, yeah, I could probably do a CPR class and reframe it in that way for the DIYers. And that ended up not happening at that point because it was still so new and I'm opening up. But when the storytelling event came around, which they called Power Tools, she was like, hey, come on and you know, do a storytelling. And so I decided to tell the story of my father having a cardiac emergency and needing CPR to be done on him. And I was the one, you know, to do CPR on him. And so I just kind of started off by saying the first thing I ever wanted to be, you know, that question, what do you want to be when you grow up? Was a teacher of some sort. And I ended up going to Benson High School and enrolling in their health occupations program. So honestly, I technically first got my CPR instructor license as a senior in high school. And then, but I didn't actually start teaching on a regular basis until the late 90s. But my first and only, knock on wood, real life CPR experience was on my father. And so I use that as, you know, it's a traumatic experience, but at the same time, I use it to tell people, because usually when people have to take CPR, and I just said already they have to take it, right? Their job, their whatever license, going to school. And for me, because I had that personal experience, I let people know that, yeah, you may feel a way about getting dragged into however many times you've had to take a CPR first aid class. And you might not really, your butt might be in the seat, but your mentally might not be present because you just feel like, I don't need that. Or you don't really need to listen because this is your 20th time taking it. But my personal experience says otherwise. It says that I get it. I don't want to have to take certain workshops over and over again either. But think of the benefit of you taking it. And the reality is, if you ever do it, it's probably not going to be on a stranger that you don't know. It's most likely going to be on a loved one, whether that's a family member or a friend. And I know because I did it, you know. And so that's basically the story I told for the storytelling event. So it just happened to combine, you know, my CPR side of me with, wasn't necessarily spoken word, but still public speaking. And you had a little cadence, a little rhythm with it, but it definitely wasn't, you know, in a poetic form for that particular event.
I'm stifling the urge to ask you to explain right now how to do CPR. I'm stifling the urge to say that, to ask you that, because I want to know. And I've seen the videos, and I mean, this is not necessarily an interview, a show about CPR, but there are certain things that are so important. To know how to do that in some level is a lot better than not knowing how to do it. Because
right.
I think the worst feeling must be to be standing aside and not know how.
Right.
But were you just going to explain it?
You know, I would feel more comfortable dispelling some myths and some concerns around doing CPR that prevents people from doing it. I strongly suggest that people have a class. And there are various types of classes. Not that there's like this big range of how to do CPR, but when I say there's different types of CPR, there's like what we call friends and family CPR. There's, you know, the CPR for the child care providers. There's CPR for healthcare providers. You know what I mean? And so there's different levels, like the family and friends CPR. It doesn't provide a CPR certificate because it's for friends and family, you know, and it might be a little more laid back of a class, you know what I mean? Versus a class where, you know, I'm teaching doctors and nurses or nursing students, medical students, where they have to have that certificate. And I have failed a doctor or two in my time. Yes, I have. And they were very offended. You know, but that's how important it is. And they may be like, well, and by the way, I never did technically go into the medical field. And so you don't have to be in a medical field to get your CPR instructor license. Yeah, would some people respect me more? Sure. But yes, I had the, I guess the power, for lack of a better word, to fail a doctor, to say, hey, those, I'm a little concerned about those CPR compressions, you know, because you have to, I will say this, you have to, on an adult, when you provide CPR, an adult is puberty and up. So when you see signs of puberty on a person, you treat them as an adult for CPR, which really, for the layperson, just means you need to push deeper onto the chest. Because what you're doing, so I can tell you what's happening when you do CPR. So when you push on the chest, when you push on the chest, you're not trying to restart the heart. Okay, so that's number one. So when you push on the chest, you're doing what the heart can't do for itself, which is circulate the blood, right? And so when you think about how the body is made, you're pushing on the chest where there's the breastbone or the sternum. And what's the purpose of the breastbone or the sternum? It's to protect the heart. But in this case, you need to, for lack of a better term, like work your way through or bypass that protective layer and the purpose to push on the heart deep enough that it circulates the blood through the body. So on an adult, we need to push down at least 2 inches deep. Now, I'm going to show you a weird thing, and I know this just because I've been teaching kids for so long. My pinky is an inch. So when you think about at least 2 inches, you're pushing down at least this much and through bone, or bypassing the purpose of the breastbone in order to put in whatever other layers we have, right? Because we have different sized bodies, to effectively push down on the heart that it circulates the blood. So they're doing the work that the heart can't do for itself. And when we combine the breaths, same idea, but just they can't breathe. Their lungs are not functioning properly. So when we provide breaths, we're doing the work of the lungs. And when you combine them together, you're pumping oxygenated blood throughout their body. And more the primary part, right, is to their brain, right? Making sure that their brain has oxygen to keep their body functioning. And so as I share with you in the email, think of yourself when you do CPR as your life support. Your life support without having to plug in to the power. You are the power. You are manual life support when you do CPR for somebody. And so that also means when you stop, you're basically cooling the plug. And so, yeah, right? It's like, woo, yeah. And so that's why it's important that you actually go take a class if possible. Or if you are finding stuff online, that you're finding correct information and correct demonstration online. Because you just don't want to rush. We love that somebody may want to help, but if you're pushing on their stomach, or if you're too high, or if you're rubbing, or if you're crossing your hands, which I hate seeing that, or whatever, or you know what I mean, then you're not doing it correctly, and you're not really helping. And so sometimes in class, more so with the kids, which makes sense, I'll have to stop people and say, I'm teaching, and I don't want you to say something that may be incorrect or could be old. So there's that too. The materials are updated every 5 years. Now, at this point, there's no huge changes. But for example, when I was telling the kids today, I'm like, you have a nosebleed, you pinch your nose and you lean forward. But years ago, they said what? You lean
back.
Right? And so there's also those types of things where it's like, if you got, well, you know, age can range, but if you got grandma, you know, that's in her 70s or 80s, her idea of first aid and CPR may be very, very different. Just like rearing children, right? Like, could be so vastly different. And so those are the things I encounter quite a bit is, first of all, trying to lower people's resistance and telling them what, hey, you don't have to do CPR on anybody. Even if you take a class, the only time you have to do it is if, obviously, if you take an oath, your doctor, nurse, whatever, or it's in a parameter of your job. If you're an educator and you've been assigned on that floor that you're the CPR person, then yes. But just in general, because somebody takes a CPR class and they technically know what to do, doesn't automatically mean that they have to do it. And so people are pretty concerned about that as well. People are concerned about being sued, you know, and those kind of things. And so what I do say is that care is also calling for appropriate help. So if you do nothing else, make sure that 911 has actually been called and that help is actually on the way. But if you do start to hands-on help, then you need to follow through. And even if it gets to the point where it's beyond your level of education or whatever, or you're tired or whatever, you know, you may be able to stop, but we don't want you to escape and leave. So once you do commit to get involved, you need to stay around and share what you know, share what you did do, if you did do some hands-on stuff and things like that. But yeah.
Oh, I've never heard that before. If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest is poet, filmmaker, educator, retired therapist, and thought leader, LaToya Hampton. She's also known as the Poet Lady Rose, holding Rhymes and Roots, celebrating North Portland through poetry workshops through Sunday, February 9th. And we're going to get there in a minute. But I just, if we could stay on your safety trainings for a minute, tell us more, like, what is your company called, and what is the full list of all the things that you train people in?
So my company is called Safety Side Up. So like Sunny Side Up, but Safety Side Up. And so my tagline is, oh man, put myself on the spot. Yeah. But, you know, so dang, I can't believe I messed that up. I haven't eaten today, so don't do that. But yeah, I, like I said, Safety Side Up. I've been teaching CPR first aid, youth safety, which is primarily the babysitter training, and Home Alone, since the late 90s. You know, yeah, there's been a few breaks in there, but yeah. So right now I teach American Heart Association curricula, and I teach HSI curricula. And HSI, they just kind of absorbed EMS safety, medic first aid, and ASHI, which are all other healthcare education or emergency response education courses are now all up under the umbrella of HSI. And then a lot of people are familiar with Red Cross. I teach American Heart. American Heart is usually what healthcare providers have to take. And so before the pandemic, I was primarily teaching the CPR class called BLS Provider, which BLS stands for Basic Life Support, which is the process I explained to you of, you know, using the metaphor, right? That hands-on CPR is basically manual life support. And so their class, the CPR class that healthcare providers have to take, and it's really, you can be the secretary in a hospital and you still have to take BLS Provider. And for some reason, I still have not found out that if you're a healthcare provider, you have to take American Heart Association's CPR, even though it's all CPR. Like, it's Red Cross versus American Heart versus HSI. They're pretty much, it's all the same CPR. They're all licensed under the same, you know, licensing body. But for some reason, if you are a doctor, nurse, or whatever, usually you have to take American Heart Association CPR. So I teach regular, whatever, regular layperson, CPR first aid. There are specific classes for healthcare providers, childcare providers. And like I said, you have the, what we call friends and family, or family and friends CPR. Whether it's, you could, these days I'm not going to come to your house, but pre-pandemic, you could schedule a little light, informal friends and family CPR, and people could drink their wine or whatever. And just, you know, if somebody's expecting a baby or grandparents or whatever, you know, you can get those types of CPR classes that doesn't have the pressure of having to pass the class to get your cert. Again, I do the babysitter trainings, the home alone safety, I've recently started doing CPR for babysitters. I'm basically using the friends and family curriculum to do that, which they don't get a cert for that. But they're 10, 11, 12, 13. They don't need a certificate. The information's the same, and I teach it the same. But yeah, let me see if I miss anything. And I want to start grandparents' classes, but that'll have to come when I have a space.
Right. Yeah, that's the other thing we haven't talked about yet. You need a new site for the classes. And let's talk about that right now, and then we'll talk about it again at the end of the hour. What do you need for a space? If anyone's listening right now and you want to provide a space for an incredible grassroots educator, trainer, someone who's doing safety, personal safety trainings, CPR, first aid, what do you need?
I would love it, ideally, if it's in North Northeast Portland. I'm thinking maybe max 2 days a week. All day. Not that the class takes all day, but, you know, to be able to have multiple sessions in a day to serve the community. If I had to guess, you know, maybe like a 400 to 500 square feet, you know, a nice size conference room or something like that. And what would be great is if we could help each other out, you know what I mean? To think about how it would look that you had an in-house CPR first aid instructor. So if you are a nonprofit or you are even a clinic of some sort and you have a room that's not being used a lot, that your staff can have somebody, you know, easily available to train their staff, that they don't have to go find a CPR class, that you're like, oh, Latoya will be here, you know, every Monday, for example, schedule it up with her, or the population you serve or whatever, that it would look great to be able to say, oh yeah, we have an in-house CPR first aid babysitter trainer, you know, whatever, on these days out of the week. I would love it to be consistent. I've had people offer me to do like one-off classes. And when I say that, like just use their space for a one-off class, I'm not really interested in that. Because again, having a central location where I'm like, this is where I'm gonna be on these days of the week, you know. Now, if your staff needs to be trained and you only need me to train your staff one time, that's different. But I've, as far as a location, a regular location for me to hold community classes, yeah, I would love it is if it's like 2 days a week or so that people know, oh, she's gonna be here on this day every week.
And it sounds like it's relational for you. Like you'd like to be creating a relationship, building community around what you do, even the place you're doing it.
Definitely. Definitely.
All right. If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest is poet, filmmaker, educator, retired therapist, and thought leader. We haven't even gotten to a lot of that stuff yet. Latoya Hampton, also known as the Poet Lady Rose. She's holding Rhymes and Roots, celebrating North Portland through poetry workshops through Sunday, February 9th. Okay, now we're going to talk about the workshops. So talk about what your vision is. What are people doing at the Rhymes and Roots Celebrating North Portland through Poetry Workshops? And why North Portland and not Southeast Portland?
Well, for people who don't know, the North Portland Library, located on Killingsworth in North Portland, has been undergoing renovation for a while now, and it is set to reopen next month, which also February is Black History Month, right? And so in addition to it being renovated, there has also been an addition, a key addition to the space, which is the Black Cultural Center. And so there's a weekend-long celebration, Saturday, February 8th, Sunday, February 9th, of the reopening celebration for that particular library, which is called North Portland Library in North Portland. And so that is why North Portland. But they approached me to help kick off the celebration as the Poet Lady Rose. Excuse me. And so they explained to me their process of, you know, talking with the community about what they wanted to see in the library, as well as speaking with the community about what they wanted the celebration to look like and who they wanted involved in the celebration. And, you know, to my surprise and warm my little heart, you know, I was told that I was requested to be, as the poet Lady Rose, to be part of the celebration. And so that was wonderful. And so the initial conversation was for me, the poet Lady Rose, to perform. But then I was like, hey, and there's certain themes to the celebration. So optimism, hope, you know, community, Afrofuturism, you know, so on the positive side, optimism, if I didn't say that, belonging. And so I knew I was going to have to write some new poetry specifically for the event. But also in doing research, I wanted to hear from the community themselves as well to help inspire my poetry. But also I was like, well, let's give them an opportunity to have these discussions and express themselves. And let's take it a step further. Let's provide an opportunity for them to write their own poetry and share it at the event as well. And so hence, I came up with the Rhymes and Roots workshop. And so we initially, and we did two. So we did one for the adults at Kenton Library, which was January 11th. And then we did one specifically for Jefferson High School students. So we want everybody across ages to be able to be a part and have their voice heard and their experience heard. And even though we did those scheduled in-person workshops, I want to provide more opportunities for people who either weren't able to come in person, didn't know about it at that point, to join us in person, but also maybe a little intimidated by like, oh, a workshop and, you know, generative poetry writing and stuff. So now that we're past the in-person workshops, I'm still holding Zoom sessions for people to just, you know, check in with me, talk about their interest, you know, ask me questions. So really anybody with a strong connection to North Northeast is welcome to join us. It's not an open mic though. So this is why the commitment to at least check in with me face to face on a Zoom session, understanding that there are themes. It is a family event. You know, it's a family event. There are certain themes that, you know, we can interpret that how we want, you know, and not to be intimidated. We could, any level of writing, you know, that we just want to welcome people. And so we still have some time between now and the 9th. So I'm performing the 8th. And the community showcase is what we're calling it. The Rhymes and Roots Community Showcase is Sunday, February 9th from 3:30 to 4:30. So what I'm asking people to do is to reach out to me. You can contact me at thepoetladyrose@gmail.com. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook at the Poet Lady Rose, you know, and just inquire. Let me know you're interested. And I'm staying on the Zoom. So it's Tuesdays. It won't be, you said you're not airing this today, but it won't be Tuesday the 28th. But Saturday mornings, 10 to 11:30, and Tuesday evenings, 7 to 8:30. And just kind of hop on. It can be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever. I just want to meet you and, you know, just kind of review, you know, what we're doing and the purpose. And then you can shoot me some poetry if you want and get my opinion on it or whatever. But it's pretty informal. It's pretty informal. But I definitely want to know that people are interested and that they're committed to take part in the event.
Right. So a generative writing workshop is a workshop where you write something, like you're a participant, yes. You generate something. And I also want to say that the North Cortland Library there on Killingsworth, it's a block away from Jefferson High School, mm-hmm. and it's a block away from the POIC, the Portland Industrial Opportunities Council, which is another major center for young people. Incredible programs over there too. And it just occurs to me that, Latoya, like you, if you've been teaching people babysitting training, right, you must have such a deep community of people who've grown up here that you've been teaching since they were teenagers who are now adults. I mean, am I imagining that?
No, you're not. And it's funny because I was trying to add it up. And this is not an exaggeration. Just kids alone with just the babysitter training, I would say if not more than probably close to 10,000 kids. Now, like you said, adults. I have a relationship with the library, a really good relationship with the library, because aside from the Poet Lady Rose, I teach a lot of the babysitter trainings, especially during the summer, with the library. And the thing about the library, if people don't know, is that everything is free at the library. And so my babysitter trainings, I won't say how much they cost outside of the library, but I will say if you're able to get your child into a babysitter training at the library, and right, and they don't check your income, they don't do anything because it's taxpayer money, right? And so it's a really good opportunity for those people who get to take the classes at the library because it's free to them. You know what I'm saying? Aside from the North Portland Library being in the community, and the community I grew up in, North Northeast. My mom is still in the home that my dad bought in the late 60s, early 70s. My father worked for the library for almost 30 years. You know, he passed away in the year 2000. And to honor my father, they renamed their employee award after him. So if you ever known somebody to win a Rosie Award through Multnomah County Library, Rosie is actually a person and is actually a male. My dad, so he passed 6 months before he would have retired for working 30 years at the library. And so it means a lot to me, you know, on multiple levels, you know, to have this relationship, to be called upon to say that we asked the community and they answered and said they wanted you. And I am a reluctant performer in the way of, I mean, obviously I perform, but I don't do it because I want or need the attention. In fact, I will, whenever I can create space and opportunity for other people to have a platform, that's what I do. And again, it's demonstrated in me asking the library and saying, hey, how about having a workshop, you know, with the intention of I get a slot on Saturday and we'll provide a whole other hour slot on Sunday for the community to be able to also be a part of the program, not just attend the program, but actually to be a part of the program. So
we must have like whole families in your mind, like walking down the street, you must be able to see people that you've known their parents, you've known their sisters and brothers, you've known them, and maybe even written poetry with them, and or like learned how to do CPR. I know this is a weird question. So you've been deeply connected with families in Inner North, Northeast Portland for a long time. Has what people are dealing with changed in any way? I know that sounds like that's a vague question, but what do you see across time with the community?
I mean, so first thing is community can mean a lot. So when you say community, say more about that.
I mean, the families and the individuals who go to POIC, go to Jefferson. A lot of the Jefferson students go to PCC Cascade. So, I mean, I guess I'm thinking community of people with a root there in Albina.
I think it's still the need for connection. It's still the need and the desire for connection. And what I've said, because there are some people when I told them about this opportunity, about the Rhymes and Roots, and they were like, oh, well, what if I don't live in North Northeast anymore? I live out in Gresham. And I was like, but you're still, this is still, that's why it says Roots, right? I chose that name for a reason. It's like, No, I get it. So it's still that need and desire to connect. This is still our home base, regardless of what area I've lived. I now live in the Williams District, but I have lived in Beaverton. Only place I have not lived is Vancouver, right? It's still Portland Metro, right? But I haven't lived over there, but I've lived in Beaverton. I've lived in Hillsboro. I lived over in the Brooklyn neighborhood. Like, I've lived all over, but I grew up on 10th between Ainsworth and Holman. And like I said, my mom is still there. You know, so when people, so it's funny that you asked about like when I run into people and things like that. And there was a while, it hasn't happened lately, where people are like, oh, we'll see each other. And like, oh man, I've been thinking about you. And then, and I'm like, well, why didn't you just ask my mom or something like that? And they'll be like, oh, your mom is still in the same house. I'm like, yeah, my mom's still there. And the phone number's still been the same for 40 years. You know, certain age people are never going to get rid of their landline, right? So it's like, it's the same phone number. The younger folks, we move, we go to school, we do this, whatever. We try other places and come back. And because I've done it, you know? And, but this is still it. I hear people say they're going to go to the Safeway up there on MLK. You know, like they'll go there intentionally because they know they're going to see somebody that they know, right? And I just saw somebody the other day at almost at Concordia. I mean, University of Oregon that took over the Concordia campus. I just saw somebody up there the other day, like that I hadn't seen in years, you know? And it's weird because sometimes people there haven't seen in 15, 20 years, they'll reckon, because I still wear my mask sometimes. And they'll recognize the mask. And I'm just like, I've seen you since middle school. Know who I am, you know? And people will not even just say LaToya. People will say, Toya, I saw somebody at the Matador about a month ago now. Hadn't seen her, I think, since middle school. And she just comes up to me, yeah, Toya, blah, blah, what are you doing now? And I told her about this event. You know, and so that part really feels good. And yeah, it has gotten to the point where I had somebody in a babysitter training and her mom and I went to middle school together. It's, you know, and now I'm Miss LaToya. You know what I mean? Like in at the library when they introduced me at Kenton, she said, Miss Hampton. I was like, not yet. I can be Miss LaToya, but not Miss Hampton yet. But no, it really does. It feels good to still have this connection and to still be looked to, you know, to say, hey, no, she represents us and we want her at this event. Because there's so many people as far as poetry and other things that they could have said. And they're like, no, you were like the top three people that were mentioned. And I was like, really? Because I just do. I do a lot on my own. It would be nice to have more financial support, you know, but I do a lot on my own. And sometimes I'm not, and again, I'm not doing it to be noticed. But sometimes you don't realize who is watching, you know? And so it's good to know that people are watching and they're paying attention. And this is a very important event to the community. So I'm happy to be a part of it and to bring other people along.
I just want to ask one more question about the library and then move on to the filmmaking, because I haven't even heard the stories about the filmmaking. You're branching out into a new multimedia direction. But I want to say the thing about the Albina Library, look, I'm pointing at the screen right now. The thing about the Albina Library is that it's what was called a Carnegie Library. It was established by the largesse of this guy, this rich and fancy New Yorker, like 100 years ago, maybe more. And so that's why it's made of stone, it's made of brick, it's ornate, it's incredible. And yet what's remarkable to me about it is that, I mean, I worked across the street from it for many years.
Well, yeah, that's
and,
right.
You know, Patricia Welch was the manager there and Charlotte Lewis, the painter, used to hang out there. It's as far as I know, that was considered to be the library that had the most resources for African-American art and literature.
Yes.
For whatever reason.
But I wanted to ask you if you know more about the renovation there. Like, what have you heard about it? Like, what's, is there something you had mentioned that there's a community center there?
Because I'd been included in the celebration and things like that, you know, I have gotten to see it. I had a tour a couple weeks ago. And based on what, and even during our workshop, she showed some pictures, but then I got to go see it in person. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And so they were very intentional about including not just the performers who are going to be performing and all that and stuff, but the art. So there's still the art. It might have changed the location within the library, but there's still key pieces that people really enjoyed. There's actual, like, the furniture. Some of the furniture has been made, handcrafted specifically for the new library. There's wood carvings. So in the Black Cultural Center space, in the windows, there's actual wood carvings, like of, I don't want to get them wrong, but it's like of people like James Baldwin and Octavia Butler and Zora Neale Hurston. Like, it's so intricate. And the paintings, even the colors that they've painted the walls, have been like, so I think it's a blue, I want to say like a royal blue, and so even, you know, the color, you know, is connected to culture. So they, it's really beautiful. They couldn't expand the footprint that much because of the, you know, the land that it's on, but and then speaking of the teens, so in the workshop at Kenton, there was a younger person who had said they didn't really like to go to North Portland. Now, remember, I just want to make a point of clarification. North Portland is reopening next month. Albina is also under renovation. That is over by Matt Dishman. So Albina will be reopening later this year. So, but this young person said they didn't really like going into North Portland pre-renovation because it was pretty dark, you know, but that also speaks to the age of the building and, you know, and lighting. And so what they did, they took those things and there really wasn't a lot of places to, like, you know, hang out or whatever. And so they took all that stuff into consideration. So they, like I said, they couldn't do a whole lot of changing with the structure of the building itself, but they did, like, do some changing around the things and like where the lighting is better, the window lighting is better, the actual overhead lighting is better. They have areas for the teens to sit and chill out. And I mean, the furniture is just beautiful. I was like, this is some huge chairs, you know, whatever. And I'm like, yeah, we really wanted the young people to feel welcome and inviting and things like that. And so they definitely did listen and take those things into consideration. And it's interesting because online, which I know is the Wild Wild West, but I've seen the older generation, not really appreciate the evolution of libraries to being more of a community space, you know what I mean? And so they're like complaining, like, oh, it used to be it's quiet, when they like miss that, because they're like, well, now they're having all this youth programming and they're, you know, and they're doing things that they didn't previously associate with the library, right? Like a babysitter training. You know what I mean? Like, years past, you would have not thought, oh, we could go to the library and do a babysitter training, or we can go to the library and do a STEAM or STEM thing. You know what I mean? And so I love that the library has become a community center of sorts and not just really stuffy and so much structure and stuffy and, you know, things like that. And so just to go back to what you asked, yes, they... it will be noticeable when you walk in and you see the changes that have been implemented and the technological advances as well. Even upstairs in the big room, You know, they've updated the technology and stuff like that and everything. So a lot is going to feel familiar, but with some updating. But the Black Cultural Center and the patio, there's like a patio deck area as well that's been added. So I think people will be pleasantly surprised and when they really take in and make the connections on the intent, the intentional choices that were made, I think people will be happy about it.
If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest is poet, filmmaker, educator, a retired therapist and thought leader. Haven't even gotten to that yet. Latoya Hampton, the poet Lady Rose. She's holding Rhymes and Roots, celebrating North Portland through poetry workshops through Sunday, February 9th. But since we're running out of show, I want to shift gears and talk about your filmmaking. Talk about what you're doing next. What's on the table for you? We want to hear all about it. All of it.
Well, I've made one film, so I can technically say I'm a filmmaker. 2 years ago, I created Pebbles and Thorns, A Spoken Word Journey. It started from responding to a request from artists to submit proposals to Portland Playhouse for their Return to Wonderland Short Film Festival in 2022. I never made a film before. I'd just be doing stuff. Sometimes not. I'd submit a pitch, but my curiosity and concern for the youth is what prompted my pitch, which again, that was 2022. So, you know, the pandemic, we were still a bit more into the pandemic than we are now. And I was just really curious about the youth and how they were doing. And I struggled a bit, even though I'm a former mental health therapist, I'm human. And so I was alone when we were, you know, secluded at home and everything. I didn't have the busyness to keep my mind off of things. And so I struggled quite a bit, you know, with my anxiety and mental health and stuff. And I thought, well, I'm an adult, I'm very capable. I know these things, even though I might not be implementing all the things. And I'm struggling. So what's going on with the youth? Because, you know, outdoors was even off limits, right? The parks were off limits.
For a few minutes,
yeah. You know, and so I just really was really curious. And I'm not a parent, you know, but I've always worked with kids in some capacity. And I really was just curious, like, what's going on with the youth? And I mean it when I really want to know. And I don't believe in censoring them. Yes, there's respect, but I don't believe in censoring. And so I submitted to Portland Playhouse that I wanted to create a film, but use a spoken word camp as the basis of the film. So you see the commonality through all of this is that I provided that platform in the form of a writing and spoken word camp for them to be able to share their experiences of the pandemic and beyond, and to put it in words and also to perform it at the end. And I filmed about 95% of it. So I had a week's worth. I had from 8:30 to 3 Monday through Sunday worth of film to 1 week to pare down. Initially, it was supposed to be to 10 or 15 minutes. And I bargained my way up to 30 minutes. Because it was called A Spoken Word Journeys. And so I wanted the kids. I ended up with 4 young people, age 13 to 16 or 17. And I wanted each kid to basically have their own mini story. And you're able to see them from day one to the last day and see their progression in just a week's time. And so you can tell it's my first film. But I'm still very proud of it. And I've screened it a few times. The last screening and the largest screening so far was last August at the Alberta Abbey. And and so I want to do some more. I want to do some more this time, with my experience and, you know, lessons learned, but also hopefully getting a little more training and a better equipment. I think storytelling in another form, I didn't know before I did it, but now I'm like, oh, I like this. I like this other avenue of storytelling. And so, yes, I still would love to clean the current version up some more. I've been screening it, but I still cringe a little bit in certain parts because it needs some audio, you know, adjustment and some color correction and stuff, but I've still been screening it periodically. I'd love to clean that up to be able to submit it to some film festivals. But then, yeah, I'm looking at other opportunities to do another film. And I've actually had people at the screening ask about doing it with different age groups. And I was like, hey, are you a philanthropist? Like, you do know this costs money, right? But people enjoyed it and they were like, yeah, I would be interested to see you do this again, even with other age groups. And so going back to your question, people they're looking for a connection. They're looking for opportunities to express themselves and be heard. I'm like, for real, be heard and not judged, you know? And so I think for me, even though I can provide that for a range of ages, I just feel like youth need that. They need that. They need, because a lot of times they're kind of set up where people say, oh, you can say this, I won't get mad. But then they find out quickly that that's not true. And I'm not perfect, but I would say I've done a pretty good job of keeping my word. And I think that's also what helps people to feel comfortable to connect to me, because I'm pretty transparent and honest and vulnerable, and I keep my word as much as possible. So
what do you hope will come from all of this work in 5 years, 10 years?
I'm already at the beginning of the path on this, but teaching other people, not just poetry, but teaching them how to use poetry to connect to other people, and empower other people. And so I am at the beginning of the journey of doing conferences and using poetry as professional development for organizations and corporations, team building for corporations and organizations. And so that's what I see myself doing. I've been taking my own trainings and consulting for myself to be able to help me communicate that and communicate the benefits of poetry, and not just people going, oh, that's cute. Like, no, there are some real benefits, lasting benefits, that can be generalized and in the long term, for poetry, for all ages, all stages of development, you know, everything. And so that's what I'd like to do. Combine poetry with mental health and other types of care that really get into the profession of poetry.
All right. How can our listeners support your work?
You can support my work by, I have a website that needs a little updating. My website is thepoetladyrose.com. You can find me on social media everywhere at The Poet Lady Rose. Share what I'm doing. Stay up to date with what I'm doing. Again, if anything here sounds interesting and that you feel like you want to have me come and either perform, help you develop curriculum, do a workshop for the people you serve or even your staff, that's how you can support me and recommend me to other people, refer me to other people.
And also, if somebody's got a space, we talked about that earlier.
That's right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks to our guest, LaToya Hampton, the Poet Lady Rose. Find out more about what they do on Linktree. There's a Linktree, linktr.be/thepoetladyrose. That's on their Facebook and Instagram, The Poet Lady Rose. You're listening to KBOO Portland. You can make a contribution to support programming like this at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number, 44321. Special thanks to Caden Program Director Asia Hawthorne for making this all possible. Get involved by emailing volunteer@kboo.fm. Thanks for listening and stay tuned. Thank you.
Bill McKibben coming at you on KBOO Portland, Oregon.
Hello, I'm Eugene Rashad. Join me every Saturday from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. for the best in jazz on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 on your FM.